This is the Happy Pod from the BBC World Service. I'm Rachel Wright, and in this edition, how a young couple's passion is keeping old-style film photography alive in Central America.
Sharing this dream with my wife has been a very grateful experience for us. It makes me really happy because I never expected to be doing this. We see the future with amazing hope.
An Olympic athlete saves a woman from drowning in Brazil also.
You've got what would have had marble floor, marble on the walls. He had power, he had money, and wanted to show it off and impress people.
Inside the discovery of the century at Pompeii, we hear from a Kenyan man who got a music college scholarship after teaching himself piano with a cardboard replica, and the grandmother whose life lessons have gone viral.
When you've had a long life, you've met a number of situations, and you just have to take that next step. Such simple advice, and yet it's so needed.
We start in Guatemala City, where one young couple are keeping an old tradition alive. Fabricio Diaz and his wife Lucia Ramirez run a photography lab, developing analog film in their apartment. The pair, both in their 20s, started it as a passion project in 2023, but now have hundreds of customers. Arca Film Lab, which they own jointly, has become one of the only places in Central America that can develop some types of film, including that used for projection slides. And they taught themselves most of the skills. Fabricio told the Happy Pod's Holly Gibbs why he's so passionate about analog photography.
It keeps you focused on the moment. I really love the moment that you decide to take a picture and that you don't know how it's going to turn out. It's a very interesting process because when you press the shutter, you know that you saved that moment, but you got only the chance to see it after development. And that's a huge step that you have to take and a huge risk that is very interesting for many of us, the photographers that like analog photography.
And this is probably a very difficult question for you to answer, but what is your favorite photo or roll of film that you've ever developed?
The most amazing moment that I have had while developing film for me was the first slide film that we developed here. The film was about many places here in Guatemala, very colorful places. We had amazing sunsets, we had beautiful colors, but also many portraits of people from here in Guatemala making their work. So it was a very, very, very colorful film roll. And it was really cool because that was the first time we got to see slide film here in Guatemala developed in a lot of years.
And when you set up your film lab, what were you thinking?
We never expected the huge amount of support that we have had from the local community of analog photographers, because we just started developing our film rolls in our apartment with my wife. And it was just because we wanted to keep our film roll well kept during the whole process. And we got to see many people sending us messages asking if they could develop their films with us because they look really cool. And we started to see, okay, maybe we can do this for more people. What we also didn't expect was that people from other countries would write to us asking if we can find a way for them to develop their films with us, even if they were in another country.
What do people say to you when you develop their films and their photos? Do they thank you?
Yes, actually, we have received many letters from people when they send their packages to us. They say, we are very thankful for what you have done for us. So, for example, there's a letter from a person from El Salvador that says, you have been doing an excellent job and it's very amazing. Thank you for taking care of my roles. Take care and say hi to Toto. Toto is our cat, but he's always in our stories.
That's lovely. And obviously receiving these messages, it must be a really great feeling that you've followed your dream.
Of course, every time that we get the chance to read a letter from a client, it's very grateful. We feel very grateful because we also appreciate our memories the way they do. But we have the chance to serve other people. We know that we are working for them, but we always tell the people that it's a privilege for us to serve them.
How would you inspire other people to follow their passion and make a living out of it?
Being a film lab owner, it's a very huge responsibility, but sharing this dream with my wife has been a very grateful experience for us. It makes me really happy because I never expected to be doing this, and we never intended that the film lab would support our family. We dream that this film lab does not only develop photography film. We hope that we can bring back motion picture film, not just for us, but for the whole region. We have many amazing filmmakers here in Guatemala, and we want to push film, not just only for a passion project, but also for cultural projects. We see the future with amazing hope.
Fabrizio Diaz talking to Holly Gibbs. Sometimes we're in the right place at the right time, and that's the case for our next story. Bruno Lobo is an Olympic kite surfer. Last week, he was out practicing off the coast of São Luís in Brazil when he spotted a woman who appeared to be drowning, as the Happy Pod's Isabella Jewell reports.
Bruno Lobo was out practicing with his new camera one evening when he heard a woman shouting for help.
Was not the best day to practice kite. I went just to do a quick session and to test the equipment. After a few seconds, I heard she screaming on the water and was very surprised to see someone in that level of the sea, like was very offshore. And then I promptly turned my kite and then went to her to make the rescue.
Bruno approached the woman, tried to calm her down and told her to climb on his back. The footage caught on his camera shows him using his kite to carry her to the shore, where she was met by lifeguards and later reunited with her friends.
I was in the very right moment and right spot to do this, and I'm very grateful to help with her, and all the family are grateful and to have rescued her, and everything is okay.
After, the Olympic athlete, who's also an orthopaedic doctor, took to social media to warn people about the dangers of the tide and urged them to take caution when swimming in the sea. He says in saving the woman, he only did what he needed to and what was within his power.
Isabella Jewell. It's been described as a once-in-a-century discovery, a sumptuous Roman bathhouse that had lain hidden beneath volcanic rock and ash for 2,000 years. As you may have heard on the Global News podcast, it was uncovered by archaeologists at Pompeii in southern Italy, the city buried when Mount Vesuvius erupted nearly 2,000 years ago. The spa-like complex includes hot, warm and cold rooms, colourful walls, well-preserved frescoes and a huge plunge pool surrounded by red columns. The BBC was given exclusive access to the site, guided by lead archaeologist Sophie Hay.
We're starting the tour in the hot room, the Calidarium. It's a sort of relatively large room, considering it's a private residence. So there's a basin in front of us. It would be filled with water. They would dip in and get clean. You've got what would have had marble floor, marble on the walls. And you can kind of start imagining the people in this room and the noises, the sort of splashing of water, people discussing, you know, how they're getting clean or the politics of the day. It's very, very evocative of that era. Bathhouses in Pompeii in a private residence are really rare. We only know of a handful. And so for one to be on this scale must mean the owner is super rich. This is one of the very top of the elite. He had power, he had money, and wanted to show it off to clients and impress people.
Well, the discovery came during the most extensive excavations at Pompeii in a generation, which has uncovered a laundry and a bakery, as well as the large private house where a huge banqueting room was found last year. The director of the Archaeological Park of Pompeii, Gabrielle Zuck-Triegel, spoke to my colleague Nick Robinson from the Bath House and explained it had been added after the house was built.
At a certain point, the house owner decided to include this rather big bath complex in his home. I think we have to think of the Roman house, it's a bit different than what we have today. I mean, still today, you meet people who have maybe a pool in their private villa, but it's more just your private, intimate life. In the Roman house, there was a mixture of private and public. The owners would receive every morning during the salutatio the people who had business affairs or wanted to ask a favor, and then in exchange would vote for them, for example, if they would run for an office. And in Pompeii, every year elections were held. So this was quite a big affair. And so they tried to have their houses in a way that they could show off their wealth and invite people and somehow assure that they would have followers when they were needed.
This must have been an extraordinarily exciting find for you and your team. And there's still an awful lot of the city still to uncover.
Well, actually, we're excavating not so much. It's always a surprise. It's always really fascinating. What our focus really is the conservation of Pompeii. Two-thirds of the city have been excavated in more than 2.5 centuries. This is an enormous responsibility. At the same time, we have excavations going on in the countryside around Pompeii, which is much less known. So our focus really is to preserve all this and to do research also on the excavated parts, but sometimes it's necessary and useful to excavate a bit more, and then you always get huge surprises like this here.
Gabrielle Zuck-Triegel. And you can see pictures of this luxurious bathhouse on the BBC News website. Now, what's the best advice you've ever received? Well, one British woman who says her grandma's guidance has changed her life decided to let others benefit too by posting the videos on social media. And some of Christina's chats with her 95-year-old grandma, Christine, giving advice and sharing her life experiences have been viewed millions of times.
Look at yourself in the mirror, wash your face, put your clothes on, and then say, what must I do next? I must have a little breakfast. And then I will start to do this little thing that needs doing.
Christina and Christine spoke to Nuala McGovern.
When it was initially recorded, I was in quite a difficult time of my life because it was kind of just after COVID and I'd moved in with my grandma. So I was kind of venting to her a bit about where I was at and hoping for some of her wisdom and advice. And often I record her advice just so I can look back on in future. And then last summer I rediscovered the video on my phone and I thought, well, it's such a nice message that maybe one of my followers might like to hear it or it might help someone. So put it on my TikTok and I thought, you know, maybe you get 100 views or something. Mm-hmm. And I woke up the next morning to hundreds of thousands of views and hundreds of messages and it's kind of quite overwhelming and it's just carried on ever since.
And I can hear Christine laughing beside you. Welcome, Christine. I mean, what about that? Let's start first with the advice. It's very practical. Just do take one step at a time. Tell me a little bit about why you gave that such advice to Christina.
Well, I suppose in life, when you've had a long life, you've met a number of situations, some of them happy, some of them sad, and you just have to take that next step that you need to take to be of help to other people or just to develop yourself.
I loved the simplicity of it, that you just take one step at a time, things that are manageable, I guess, when you're perhaps not feeling so great.
Well, I think it's the only way you get through things, actually. If you're facing something that's been pretty disastrous in your life, or if you're facing something which is going to be very, very exciting. It is one step at a time. You don't have to be put off by external matters. You have to stick to the path that you're on.
What did you think, Christine, when you saw how popular it became?
Well, I just was surprised. I thought, my goodness, it's just such simple advice that one is giving, and yet it's so needed. And then I thought of some of the places that people go to for advice, and perhaps they're receiving advice that's not simple and that sounds difficult to follow.
Mm.
And I think what I said was so simple and anybody could follow it. And there was one response that I was so pleased with. Somebody said, that was just what I needed to hear. And I thought, gosh, it is strange that just saying put one foot in front of the other and do the next thing is what people need to know.
Did you follow the advice, Christina?
Yeah, I've been following it ever since.
And it's worked.
Well, I'm getting there, yeah.
Christina and Christine speaking to Nuala McGovern. Coming up in this podcast,
we thought as a community it's better not to get angry too much. It's better to be elegant. Let's bring the humour.
The Welsh village welcoming visitors to Pothole Land. Learning to play a musical instrument can be hugely challenging, even with the right equipment and teachers. But at the age of 13, Teddy Otieno taught himself to play the piano using just a sketch of a keyboard on a piece of cardboard. He'd fallen in love with music after watching the Chinese pianist Lang Lang on YouTube. So, as he didn't have access to an instrument, he saved up his pocket money to go to internet cafes where he watched videos over and over, copying the finger patterns. Teddy eventually got lessons through a charity and his talent won him a scholarship to a UK conservatoire or music college, and then a place in the final of a reality TV show. India Rakusen's been hearing about his story, starting with those days watching his musical heroes.
It just felt like this is what my purpose in life is, to just play. I wonder how it feels like being on that stage, and like someday I'll like just play on a Steinway piano. And during that moment I felt complete. I felt like the only thing I would want in my life is a good piano, a Wi-Fi, and an iPad. I'll just listen to music and I'll just play. For me, that felt like the perfect life.
But it wasn't until he was 16 that Teddy saw his first actual piano, and shortly after joined a musical group set up in one of Kenya's largest slums. And that is where he met a British concert pianist called Cordelia Williams, who'd travelled to Kenya to teach the group.
The way that Teddy was asking about music and talking about music, I felt was abnormally perceptive. It's just like an instinct for the music.
Yeah, I played Chopin's waltz in D-flat.
I think I felt like, wow, this person is so determined. It's such a joy to find someone who really only wants to learn.
I told myself, if this is what makes me true to myself, I'll probably have to give up everything and just do it.
Teddy dedicated all his time to practice, and in 2022 he got a place at a conservatoire in the UK, becoming the first Kenyan to attend a European conservatoire, and left his home, Kenya, behind.
To be honest, I was sad. But I had to like weigh in between like being sad for a few months and then like getting what I want, trying to play even the same level as people from the conservatoire was insane. I just felt like I did not belong until I had to stop comparing myself to the other students.
To be at that standard when they've been learning for 15 years is obviously great. Then if you sort of put that side by side with Teddy's progress, which has been so rapid, yeah, you just can't really compare the two.
I felt lonely and I called my mom like daily. I would tell her to come and pick me up and she was like, you just have to persevere. I should not forget where I've come from and things happen for a reason.
2 years into his course, Teddy took part in a British reality TV show where amateur pianists perform in front of judges. One of them was the renowned Lang Lang, someone who he had idealised and practised along with on his cardboard keyboard.
For me, I only wanted to meet Lang Lang, and that's like one of the things that's on my bucket list. That's what I really wanted to do. I only wanted to, like, this is the dude I've been seeing on YouTube all those years, and in my mind tell my kids or like my friends, you know what, I met Lang Lang and stuff. He held me like this. I was telling myself, this is how real happiness feels like. Not happiness per se, but like, this is what it feels like getting approval from someone you've always looked up to.
You could see on the TV that you were just in total shock.
Yeah, I was shocked. I played Chopin's Fantasie Impromptu, and when I walked onto the stage, I was shaking, I was nervous, and how comes all these people have come to watch me play? And like, looking at the piano, it was a big Steinway, and just felt like I've climbed one of the biggest milestones in my life, and like, if this was the last time I'm living, like, it's fine. I've just achieved what I've always wanted. Playing at that hall really meant a lot to me. It's one of the biggest achievements I've ever done in my life. It's an experience I will never forget. They sent a video and I sent it to my mom, and my mom was shouting, "Oh, my son." She told the neighbors and everything, and to me it felt nice, because like, she was proud. In the long-term goal is to have a piano academy, and I would like teach lots and lots of people, because like, sometimes I'll think and wonder like, how many Teddies are out there just trying to get access to music and everything, and I feel like I can help because I know the process and it's very hard and difficult. That's why I really want to like help and make a difference.
Teddy Otieno, and you can hear more from him on Outlook, wherever you get your BBC podcasts. A major study suggests that simply drinking milk every day could significantly reduce your risk of getting bowel cancer, the third most common cancer worldwide. The researchers, who looked at the diets of more than 500,000 women in the UK over 16 years, found the protective effects came from calcium, so other sources like non-dairy milks and dark leafy greens had the same benefits. The study from Oxford University and Cancer Research UK found that an extra 300 milligrams of calcium a day, equivalent to a large glass of milk, lowers your risk by 17%. Sophie Hutchinson spoke to Dr. Karen Papier from Oxford University, who was involved in the study.
We have really good evidence, and we knew that consuming too much alcohol is associated with a higher risk of colorectal cancer, and that consuming too much red and processed meat is also not great. But there's some evidence that consuming potentially dairy and whole grain foods might be probably protective for colorectal cancer. So we said, let's take what's the single biggest study to date. So over 500,000 women, over nearly 17 years of follow-up on average, and see, well, what are we seeing when it comes to diet and colorectal cancer? And we're confirming what we already know for alcohol. But we also saw a really strong, potentially protective effect for calcium. And we think this is really robust, and we're really adding to the evidence here.
What do you think the calcium's actually doing?
There's different hypotheses around why calcium might be protective. One hypothesis that's gained a lot of traction is that calcium might bind to some acids in our gut. By doing this, it keeps these acids from harming the lining of your gut.
And just how much milk or dairy do you need to be eating to protect yourself, do you think?
We saw that for every additional 300 milligrams of calcium, we were seeing a 17% lower risk of developing bowel cancer. A large glass of milk contains around 300 milligrams of calcium, but it doesn't need to just be dairy milk. So for instance, soya milk that has added calcium in it has the same amount in a large glass. Bread that has flour that's been fortified with calcium also contains a lot of calcium, as do dark leafy green vegetables, nuts. So there are actually a lot of different sources. We think it's really exciting. Calcium is something that is widely available in our foods. And if this could be having a protective effect of bowel cancer, then this is a really exciting finding and something where we can take action and potentially help prevent our risk of bowel cancer.
Dr. Karen Papier from Oxford University. A rather unusual world record has been set in the US for the most stuffed toys thrown onto the rink during an ice hockey match. At the game in Pennsylvania, footage shows fluffy toys flying over the glass after the home team, the Hershey Bears, scored against the Providence Bruins.
Traps and Oscar Mosey shoots. It scores! Bring on the sweet, cuddly mayhem! Mike Scarbosa makes the fur fly. It's teddy bear toss bedlam in Hershey.
Well, I wish I'd been there. Anyway, the American Hockey League team has been holding its annual teddy bear toss since 2001 and says this year's total was 102,343, beating the previous record of 74,599 set last year. The club says the stuffed toys will be sent to 35 local charities. Roads riddled with potholes are a frequent cause of anger and frustration in many countries. But people living in one village in North Wales have decided instead to try to see the funny side by turning them into a spoof tourist attraction called Pothole Land. Sarah Easdale has been speaking to some of the residents.
Well, I think we should start naming these potholes.
Now, my favourite's down there.
Neighbours Ed Rayner and Russell Kirk surveying the worst of the potholes on the lane they both live on in the village of Pontfadog.
Mm. I've been down in that one a few times, both cars.
They, along with other residents of the valley, say the condition of some of the roads is so bad they feel cut off from life with every car journey and expedition.
I did axle grind that one myself the other week.
Having repeatedly reported their potholes to their local authority, Wrexham County Borough Council, to no avail, the villagers have taken a humorous approach, putting up spoof signs welcoming visitors to Pothole Land, declaring they have the deepest, longest and widest potholes in Wales.
It's been maturing nicely.
It's been maturing nicely, and it's twice as deep as it used to be.
Standing in one hole of at least a metre long, Russell Kirk says though daily life is no joke, it's a lighter way of calling attention to their predicament.
To try and drive a car up and down this is just so difficult. People don't come up anymore. We thought as a community it's better not to get angry too much. It's better to be elegant. Let's bring the humour and let's hopefully raise the profile of this so that something can be done.
Ed Rayner says living on a minor rural road, you might expect some lumps and bumps, but he says that's far from what they're dealing with. The residents of Pontfadog are hopeful officials will visit, even if just to take the signs down. And they've made an offer to the council. Give us some tarmac and we'll fix the roads ourselves.
Sarah Easdale reporting. And that's all from the Happy Pod for now. But if, like Christina, who we featured earlier, you've had some brilliant or life-changing advice from your grandparents, we'd love to hear about it. Send us an email or a voice note to globalpodcast@bbc.co.uk. This edition was mixed by Callum McLean. The producers were Holly Gibbs and Rachel Bulkley. The editor is Karen Martin. I'm Rachel Wright. Until next time, goodbye.